that's kind of the philosophy that we try and apply to Fox's Bow. We're like, okay, if we want to say we're going to be disruptive, like, it can't just be the label, it can't just be the liquid, it has to be everything that we do, it has to be how we show up, it has to be who we partner with, everything.
Hey, welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. The Entrepreneur Experiment reveals the secrets and systems world-class founders use to build their business, their body, and their brain. Today, we have an incredible entrepreneur. We're chatting to Alice Carroll, the founder of Fox's Bow. She is ripping up the playbook when it comes to building a new brand and a new whiskey from scratch. It's a sensational story about how she's taken on global giants and beating them from right here in Ireland. This is my chat with Alice Carroll. First, quick thank you to my partners. I've got a massive ambition for this podcast. I want to make this the number one business podcast in the world. If I'm going to do that, I've got to be world-class on every single level. And that includes having a world-class studio, which I now have at iconic offices, The Green Room. It's an incredible space. I first recorded here with my live pod back in June, and I loved it. And get this, it's publicly bookable. That means you can go online and book it right now. As I said, it's called The Green Room. It's a private cinema and screening room. That means it's perfect to wow a client with a pitch, host a private screening, or do what I do, record a podcast here. So, as I record here, and as you know, I'm a member of Iconic Offices, I've got the team at Iconic Offices to hook us up with a number of exclusive complimentary office trials and discounts for my audience for booking this exact space. No catches. Simply go to the web link in the description, grab the offer that works best for you. Thanks, Iconic Offices. The Wealth Summit is on at the RDS on November 15th. It's for entrepreneurs, business owners, and those that aspire to be. If you're at the startup, scale-up, or sell-up stage of the entrepreneurial journey, then the Wealth Summit is for you. Learn how to build personal and business balance sheets through business growth strategies and build out critical paths to financial independence. Join Stephen Bartlett, Niall Quinn, Mandy Hickson, Tom Gannon, and 30 other speakers for a day of empowerment, motivation, education, growth, and networking. And we have an exclusive offer for listeners of the pod. For €150 plus VAT, you're going to get a discounted Access All Areas ticket, which also gives you access to the Wealth Tribe lunch, and it gives you a free masterclass on November 16th on how you can actually implement AI into your business. It doesn't even end there. The first 10 people to sign up by September 15th will get a ticket to the 10X Growth Camp in Lutterstone Castle on September 29th, where you'll deep dive into business growth strategies, financial growth strategies, and AI implementation for growth. So click the link below to avail of this incredible offer. Alice, welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you here. You've got your very slick branding just over your left shoulder.
What a coincidence.
How did that get there?
Yeah.
I love that though. Your branding is so bloody strong.
Thank you very much.
I remember that. I think it was Fiona from Riley shared something. It probably was her sharing it or something, or she liked it and it popped on my LinkedIn feed. I was like, what is that?
Yeah. Yeah, we're trying to do something a bit different in the space, and definitely leaning in massively to design as part of that. So I'm glad that it's standing out for you.
Well, consumer survey of one, it's working. But for anyone listening in audio, what are we looking at?
So this is Fox's Bow Irish Whiskey. We're a new Irish whiskey brand. We launched in November of 2021. As an e-commerce exclusive to kind of test the concept. But I kind of think we launched properly in like March of 22. We're trying to bring something very contemporary and vibrant and I suppose reflective of modern day Ireland and the modern consumer in a space that tends to be quite traditional. So even when we were kind of briefing in the design, we were like, okay, if whiskey at the moment is a sea of blacks and greens, like, we want to go neon. Like, what's the furthest from that we can possibly go? So yeah, that's how we ended up with this bad boy here. But
it's everything about it. The bottle shape is unusual. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple, just go to YouTube quickly and have a look. Like, bottle shape is unusual. The colors are unusual. The font is unusual. Mm-hmm. Great name, by the way. I have to say the name is strong.
Do you know, are you familiar with Fox's Bow?
No.
Okay, so.
I should be, but I'm not.
Well, you will be after this. We're a very strong Limerick brand. Co-founders, myself and Tony, are both from Limerick.
Okay.
And Fox's Bow is this tiny little side street that connected two of the main shopping streets in Limerick. Like, it's literally blinking, you'd miss it. But it always housed creatives.
Off Cruises Street?
No, so it's Thomas Street and William Street.
Yes.
Yeah, so like literally you'd walk past it, but it always has housed like creatives of different types. So like back in the day, it would be like dressmakers and poets and, you know, all this kind of thing. And today it's like tattoo artists and kind of real foodies. And there's a record store there and all that kind of stuff. So we were like, okay, well, we're trying to kind of encapsulate that whole creative spirit. We want to be a brand that people from Limerick will recognize as a Limerick brand, but also that the name travels.
Yes.
So
it's a great, like, it's a strong name. I had no idea that's what it was.
Yeah. Like, I nearly feel like it sounds more like a craft beer or something than a whiskey. Because usually whiskey is like something bridge or something castle or like someone's surname. Whereas I feel like Fox's Bow is a little bit edgier.
I live out near the Wicklow Wolf and I'm like, great name.
Yeah.
Powerful.
Exactly.
Strong. Yeah. Because I remember, well, obviously I remember because I live beside it, but strong.
Yeah.
Memorable.
Yeah.
Fox's Bow is like that. And naming is bloody hard.
Yeah, it's so hard.
Oh my God, long did it take to come up with that now?
We went through so many iterations.
The whiteboard was out and you're like, something.com.
Yeah.
What can we get?
Like at one stage, we were going to call it Brazen Irish Whiskey. And then we were like, okay, maybe that's a bit too on the nose.
Yeah.
Do you know, like it's what we're trying to do. It's the essence of what we're trying to be. But we're like, do we need to put it as the name? Probably not.
Brazen. It's part art, part science, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And how did you settle on Fox's Bow?
In the end, I think we were like a little bit time crunched because everything else was ready to go. Like literally like the design work on the side, the scar label, like the color, everything was done except for the name.
Really?
Yeah. So it kind of was like, fuck it. Like, let's just run with it and see what happens.
You have to.
Yeah. But I'm so glad. I'm so glad we did.
You'd still be there now thinking about
100%. And everyone, like yourself, even when they don't know the story, if they're not from Limerick, they don't know the place.
Yeah.
They're all like, the name's really cool.
Yeah.
And as well,
but it stands on its own. It doesn't need. It's lovely to have that heritage. So for you and for the backstory and the founder origin story and all that, when you're selling a million bottles a week, like that's important. But it's a nice little nod to yourself going,
100%.
I'm proud of that.
And unintentionally as well, like there's this fox element to it where it's like kind of the crafty fox and like the fox does things differently and it's almost like stealthy and whatever.
Oh, I play it up all the time.
Yeah.
I'm using the pun all
course.
The time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like, I love that even that we can kind of, you know, use the fox emoji or like we've a little fox emblem that we're working on at the moment and things like that, that like I almost want it to become, you know, the bat sign in the sky for Batman. I'm like, when we're doing like crazy shit that like is borderline illegal, instead of putting Fox's Bow Irish Whiskey on it, like the logo, can we use a fox? And ultimately people will be like, oh, I know what that is.
What's the shortcut? That's the ultimate for any brand.
Yeah.
The swoosh.
100%. You know, yeah.
It's a cliche, but like the swoosh.
Yeah.
What's the shortcut in your head to go, I know what that is.
100%. Yeah. So it's that, like it's building that. And none of that, I'd love to be like, oh yeah, that I thought about all of that when we were coming up with the name. No, all of that is like after the fact of being like, oh, actually that works really well. And that, you know, it's very in line with what we're trying to do. So like, yeah, let's lean into the fact.
There's also beauty and constraint as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you've infinite choice, we talked about this earlier, when you've infinite choice, you've no choice.
Yeah.
You're just paralyzed by like, oh, I could do it on a Tuesday or I could do it on a Friday or it could be purple, it could be pink. When you go, just pick one.
Yeah, 100%.
Just pick one and off we go. And then suddenly, because you've narrowed down your focus, I think of it as like, you know, like a giant light or a spotlight. And when you zoom it down, you're like, now we know exactly where we're playing.
100%.
We know and need to get creative within that constriction.
Yeah. But actually, one thing that happened was when we started playing around with that kind of like the fox and like who the fox was and the emblem and all that kind of stuff, my co-founder Tony got a tattoo of a fox with a bow tie and he showed me it and I was like, interesting. And he was like, what? And I was like, I always thought of like the fox's bow, the bow being like a bow and arrow, like a badass, like Robin Hood.
Oh, he thought it was for the thing.
Yeah. He thought it was like a like Dickie bow. And I was like, I don't think our fox will wear a Dickie bow. Like,
Tony, you should have talked to me before this tattoo.
But also I was like, oh, I'm so mean even saying that. Like, that's on his body now. And he was like, okay, well, our interpretations can just be different. And I was like, yeah, that's fine.
Tony's like, this was the original brand and now the branding is over there.
I know. But
fair play to him, though. Full in, all in.
Full in, yeah.
I respect that.
Yeah.
That's the only way to live.
I think so, too.
Man, Tony, I like Tony's style. I have a fox tattoo on my left forearm.
Oh, very good.
No bow tie, though. Just standard fox.
Fair.
Are you a marketer at heart? Where do those come from?
Yeah. So I did business in UL But I majored in marketing.
Same.
Yeah.
There Twins. You go. Synergy.
Twinning and foxes. We have actually a lot
going on here.
Yeah. I like it.
So you then went on to work in marketing.
I did, yeah. So when I was in third year in UL, you could do co-op. So I went over to New York.
I went to Intel and Leakslip. Not as glamorous.
Okay, so we don't have as much in common on this.
That's where we hard deviated. It was that was grim. I was a chemicals and gases buyer.
Oh wow.
It was the worst.
Oh my god.
I took it because it was Intel. I was like, ooh, cool.
Yeah, the sexy
tech,
name.
Sexy name. Yeah. And I got there and they handed me like into this cubicle again, shutter. And I was like literally sitting there all day. And like, it was the equivalent of like looking at Microsoft DOS now. And you just had to like move these numbers and there were gases and chemicals. Talk about a man not suited to that job.
God, no.
It was the worst. God. Now we could crack because there was about 30 or 40 people from UL up there at one time. Maynooth's a great spot. Mm-hmm. But it was the worst experience ever. It was grim. So you went to New York. I went to Maynooth. That's where our sliding doors moment.
Yeah.
Talk to me about New York.
yeah. So like UL, obviously, you can either organize your own co-op or you can end up in...
Like me. Yeah. Like it's okay. You can say that.
So I was like, okay, well, I want something sexy.
Yeah.
So I literally sent my CV to every single person who would possibly have any type of an info at email in New York. And naturally, I got zero responses because I also was like, hey, I'm Irish. I don't have a visa for the US, but can you get me a visa and also give me a job? Yeah. And they were like, no response. Like, and this is probably where I realized the like power of your network.
Mm.
So we had a family friend who lived in New York. I was just chatting to her. I was like, look, if you know of anyone, you know, like I'm kind of desperate at this stage. And she was like, oh, my kids go to school with, and sorry, I had said as well, I'd love to get into fashion, like something to do with fashion. And she was like, oh, my kids go to school with a kid whose mom is, I think it was like VP, if not CEO of Fendi for North America.
Wow.
Based in New York.
Even I know like, what Fendi is.
Yeah. I was like, but. So she ended up getting my CV in front of HR and HR were like, yeah, we actually have an internship position, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, it was just amazing. Like the power of your
that
network.
Is wild.
Yeah. Like pure chance. Like, but people are sound like people, do you know? But anyway, so went over, did Fendi, realized that like fashion was so not for me. Like,
really?
Yeah. It was.
Why?
So maybe it was that particular experience, but like it was very Devil Wears Prada vibes.
Oh,
like,
really?
It was very
the movie
like,
is true.
Okay. Yeah. And I kind of got away with it because I could like feign a bit of naivety around being Irish. Do you know, I kind of leaned into the whole like, oh, should we chat to everyone? We're friendly with everyone or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas like there were certain interns that weren't allowed kind of sit in the same areas as their bosses. It was all very...
Ooh.
Yeah, it wasn't my vibe. It was an amazing experience and I learned so much. And in fairness, my boss was incredible. Like, I learned so much, but I also learned for myself, I didn't want to be in fashion anymore. So...
That's a valuable lesson in itself.
A very valuable, very valuable lesson. And I was working in an Irish bar while I was there. Like, so I still kind of was getting the New York experience and all that kind of stuff. And one of the girls I was living with was on a graduate program for Kilbegan at the time. So she actually got me into whiskey like around that time anyway. And I was kind of going to bars with her and like getting a sense of kind of what her job looked like. She had done marketing as well. And it kind of gave me the bug for that route as a potential graduate program. So then when I finished college, I went for the Jameson graduate program, got that. And that's kind of like the proper kind of first step into whiskey for me. Which I suppose at the start was more of a kind of hybrid sales and marketing and trade marketing role. But it was great because you got like, I started with a very practical perception on what it took to make a whiskey successful, as opposed to going straight into an office job where you're a little bit detached, you're in the ivory tower.
It's very much so. It's all numbers and digits on a screen, right?
Yeah. Like it's the theory of marketing as opposed to like its practical implementation.
There's so much overlap here. My wife did the Jameson graduate program back in the day. She went to Barcelona and like that, boots on the ground, in bars every night, sampling, tasting, grueling work.
Yeah.
Very tough.
Oh,
but
tough,
the understanding she gained from that, exceptional.
Yeah, 100%. Even like, so there's kind of that whole like theory, I suppose, with people where they say like sales is one function, marketing is another. and that they never see eye to eye. But when you start with the sales team and the trade marketing team, you realize like, you realize why they are quite siloed normally, because they don't really understand each other. Mm. Whereas when you can explain to a salesperson why you're doing something a certain way and they feed into the strategy,
yeah,
like it's actually very, everyone is working toward the same goal.
It's the same thing, exact yeah. same thing. Sales is marketing, marketing is sales. Yeah. They used to be siloed. I think modern companies now go, same.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a mess. Like,
it's the same function. The end result has to be the same.
100%.
Have we shifted a unit of Fox's Bow or
yeah.
not?
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
if not, both functions need to be looked at.
Yeah.
So what did you do? You went on the grad program. Where'd you go?
I started in France, in Lyon. So I was there for a year. And that was an interesting experience as well, because I had book French. Like, I could probably write.
I was just going to ask you, what was your French like?
I could write a letter to your solicitor.
But Alice.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to have a conversation with anyone. Like, and like, whatever about Paris, like Lyon, people do not speak English. Like, some people speak English. That's a blanket statement. But like, no one in my office spoke English.
Yeah, you're not in a tourist area. You're not in a no. high traffic.
No.
Okay.
So like, when I went in, I was like, bonjour, je m'appelle Alice. j'aime du whisky. And they were like, what? Who are you? Like, what's going on? So it was like sink or swim. It was like, you learn how to speak French and you learn how to like navigate. And France is a tough market. Like, France is like quite old school. Like, it's quite like relationship building, you know, like it's a bit of a boys club, all that kind of thing. So a sink or swim, which was, I just think is the best way to learn.
Yeah.
Like, you just, you know, you just jump in and you're like, right, okay, there's only one way to succeed here, and it's to get on board and learn French and learn, you know, the culture and all the rest of it, and then just...
All in or nothing at all. Yeah. And that's the only way to live.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, did France for a year, loved it. Was so sad to be leaving, and then went over to Toronto and did the graduate program there for about 6 months. And then I moved into their kind of main office in Toronto, covering Canada, let's say, in trade marketing, and then ultimately back to brand. So I've generally always kind of worked on whiskey. Like, I looked after the imported whiskey portfolio, which would have been Irish and Scotch whiskey.
Okay.
For a little while, I was on rum and tequila, which was really fun because it meant I got to visit hot countries for brand visits instead of like back to Ireland.
More lifestyle.
But no, generally whiskey, like that's kind of my passion anyway. So loved that. Mm.
And it's unusual, as in, like you said, old boys club there. It still is quite a male industry, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, both from like the decision makers, let's say, within kind of spirits as a whole, but like predominant, or like particularly whiskey would be like still over-indexed massively male. But even like from a consumer perspective, it's massively, there's still this perception that the category is for men, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And like different countries are at different stages of that, where like there's more female consumers coming in. Like, America is definitely a lot more progressive than Ireland, let's say, in that regard. But I think there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of like that perception of who whiskey is for.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of bullshit around the category. Let's call a spade a spade, you know? And that's probably the one that annoys me the most.
Where does that come from?
I think it's just perpetuated consistently through kind of the different marketing campaigns. Like, I'm not going to say the statistic because I'm going to get arseways, but there was a study recently by this initiative called Our Whiskey, which looks at female representation in whiskey. And they found like something ludicrous, like 60% of all marketing campaigns only features men, male consumers. And I can't even remember what the statistic was that it included women, but it was so low. So like we were only chatting about it earlier, but like, you can't be what you can't see. Do you know? So like, if you're a female consumer and all you're getting targeted with is like, women drink vodka, women drink gin, men drink whiskey, like, subconsciously you're going to be like, okay, it's not for me.
It feeds in, and you filter, right?
You know
if you got up every day and thought about every decision you make, you wouldn't leave the house, because it'd be paralyzing. I think it's 40,000 decisions we make in a day, but like, you have to have shortcuts.
100%.
So when you make, you know what, I'm going to have an Americano, great, you know, you shortcut down to just your things that you like and the things that speak to you. If it isn't speaking to you, your brain just shuts off.
Absolutely.
It's marketing at the highest level, essentially.
Yeah, 100%. There's a few other kind of perceived rules around the category as well that I think like reinforce things like that. Like even it just like this is why I got into Fox's Bow as well, is because it just drives me insane. I just feel like there's so many like barriers to entry, let's call it, into whiskey that are so outdated.
Like what?
Like another one would be that drives me insane would be that you have to drink your whiskey a certain way, right? And this drives me insane because like a normal or like what would be the standard kind of normal alcohol by volume for whiskey would be about 40%. Now it obviously varies. We're actually at 43. Some of them are higher, but like 40 would be kind of a Jameson would be 40, let's say. Gin is similar. Vodka is similar. Like 40 would be the standard across those. So if you don't drink vodka neat and you don't drink gin neat, you're probably not going to like your whiskey neat if you try it for the first time. So if someone tells you, oh, you have to drink that neat, and you drink it neat and you say, oh, I don't like that, it tastes too strong.
Like, never try it again.
You'll never try it again because you have a perception that that's what whiskey tastes like. Whereas you have tonic with your gin probably. You might have soda with your vodka. Try ginger ale with your whiskey or like soda water with your whiskey, whatever you want. Try it that way. And then if you're like, actually, I still don't like the taste, grant. But at least you tried it in a way that you would actually drink it normally. Do you know what I mean?
That's a really interesting insight. I hadn't actually thought of that before. Yeah. You know, you don't just sit there and drink, shot down a neat gin.
Yeah. Like it's kind, it kind of again reinforces that like macho-ness of like, oh, I drink my whiskey straight and, you know, even I'd never put ice in it and whatever. I'm like, honestly, drink it however the fuck you want. Like you paid for that bottle, drink it however you want. You wouldn't let someone tell you, to your analogy there, how to drink your coffee. Like if we just went for a coffee there, I got a black Americano, you got a latte. If you were like, oh, Alice, you have to put milk in that, that's the right way to drink coffee. Yeah. I would be like, no, I'm going to drink coffee the way I want to drink coffee. Why is it not the same with whiskey? That's why we exist.
It's a brilliant why.
Yeah.
It's overhyped, isn't it? Find your why. But then when you have a really passionate why that's real, I think some people try to retrofit the why after the fact. They're like, we did it because it would make loads of money. People don't say, you know, that's fine too. You know, you don't have to have a like this all-encompassing why, but I love when people have a passion and a reason. That's a really good insight. You don't really think about that, like all these kind of like rules around stuff. And they're self-perpetuating by the brands, obviously, because their target market is a certain type of person. They need to speak to them on their language. And, you know, James Bond has his thing on the rocks. You know, it's,
yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
What other kind of stuff surrounds the industry that you just, you're in it to disrupt?
So I think in general with whiskey, a lot of it is very heritage focused. So it focuses on the tradition of whiskey making, provenance, so like where it's from, the story behind it. Like you'll see on a lot of whiskeys, you know, we were founded in 1732 or whatever. It's all about like longevity.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if like that that is the staple of quality, whereas like there's no whiskey to my knowledge or like in my opinion that reflects modern contemporary Ireland and like the modern contemporary consumer.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing. If you look at like clothes, sneakers, watches, cars, like any kind of consumer good, they're all reflective of like current aesthetic, current values, you know, the way that the consumer currently shows up. So like in my head, I'm like, why does that not extend to whiskey? And I think it's for us, it's very much time that like whiskey caught up, do you know, like even what we were just talking about, but like that whole notion of exclusivity, like that it's for a certain type of person, the exclusive clubs, all this kind of stuff. Like we know that our generation and the generation below are looking to like form brands now, like they want a seat at the table. And like you see it through how popular personalization is, like it's mad, you know, but for some reason, whiskey remains as exclusive as ever. So really like we're trying to kind of knock that on its head and make whiskey accessible.
I suppose they're trying to build a massive moat around themselves so that they kind of force out any, they almost make it not worth it.
Like that's not attractive to younger consumers. What motivated our dads and our granddads to drink whiskey, like maybe was the age statements and the quality and the provenance and all that story. That's not the same as what motivates consumers today. Do you know? Like there needs to be an accessibility to it. You don't want to feel stupid bringing a bottle of whiskey to your friend's house that it's going to be ridiculed because there's a lot of jargon. Like, what does it all mean? Like triple stilled. Okay, what the hell does that mean? Or like, you know, it's 12 years old. Oh, right. Is that a signal of quality? I don't like, yeah. I've tried 12-year-old whiskies that are fucking shocking. And I've tried 4-year-old whiskies that are absolutely delicious. So like even navigating that is difficult.
That's an interesting point, right? Because you like what you like.
Yeah.
But you just feel, oh, here, this is whatever. Like, I don't really drink wine or whatever, but I aim in for Winespark on. And he was giving me all these insights. And I was like, I don't really understand any of that.
Yeah.
And if you go out, and he made a really interesting point about the wine list. Terrifying.
Yeah.
People are like, it's like, I think it's the same with whiskey. And yeah. So people are like, here, pick your whiskey. And you're like,
yeah, you don't look stupid. Don't. Like,
no one does.
Yeah.
So that's a really good insight into the market as well.
Yeah.
So how did you launch? You said you launched online first.
Yeah. So we partnered with, there's an Unreal e-retailer in Ireland called Irish Malts. So we launched exclusively with them. So we kind of created a lot of hype around the...
What are they called? Irish what?
Irishmalts.com.
Okay.
They're great. It's two Cork brothers and honestly,
I've
like,
across them yet.
Yeah, you should have them on. They'd be brilliant. John would talk for Ireland, like, but he's like our own little Del boy. Like, whenever we have
love
a problem,
that.
We like go to him and we're like, bottling, do you have a solution? And he's like, no, but I'll make one. Like, yeah, he's great.
Problem solver. Love
yeah,
people like that.
Totally. Yeah. But sorry, so we launched exclusively with IrishMalts.com to begin with. We did like a lot of digital kind of testing to see what messages were resonating, all that kind of thing. We created as much hype as we could organically.
How'd you do
product.
That?
Just like...
Because you did get quite buzzy. You were prominent. Like,
yeah.
So talk to me about that.
So our approach in general is kind of like, I suppose, like the Amazon approach in a way of being obsessed with our consumer.
Mm.
So everything that we do, we think about, like, rather than starting with our whiskey and being like, okay, what message do we want to shout at consumers? Like, what do we want them to think about Foxbow, whatever? We're like, no one has time for that. Like, I know myself, even scrolling on Instagram, I block out so much noise. Like, all that, I'm not taking in the ads. Like, we have become blind to that because we're so inundated with it every day. So the only way to break through, I think, is thinking about the consumer, thinking about, like, what do they care about? What other products are they engaging with or buying and why? Like, what's the motivator? And then applying that to Fox's Bow. So being like, okay, where can we add value to their life or where can we entertain them or like do something that will stop their thumbs from scrolling?
Mm.
And also we're in a category that's dominated by multinationals. So they have infinite budgets. So you're never going to win going tete-a-tete with them on spend or anything like that. So we try and be like really crafty and like borrow cues from like sneaker culture and clothing brands and you know the dating app Thursday. Like I'm obsessed with them.
No.
They are all
Thursday.
About yeah,
I've
they're
never
all
even
about
heard of it.
Oh, it's so good. Well, I don't use it, but I just am obsessed. I'm married, but I'm obsessed with their like social because they're always doing these like cool little stunts, like really fast, quick and dirty stuff, but it like makes an impact. And that's kind of the philosophy that we try and apply to Fox's Bow. We're like, okay, if we want to say we're going to be disruptive, like it can't just be the label. It can't just be the liquid. It has to be everything that we do. It has to be how we show up. It has to be who we partner with, everything. So like for us, we do a lot of like quick and dirty mini stunts.
Give me some examples. Talk to me about them.
So one that I love at the moment, and we're literally doing this right now, so this is why it's top of mind with me, but we're having such a hard time getting into bars.
Okay.
Because their back bar is their back bar. There's no extra space. So like to get you in, they have to take something out. And as I said, our category is dominated by multinationals. Mm. So the multinationals are putting down the dollars. Like, you know, there's big spend there. So how can they justify taking away one of those brands and putting in this independent brand that has no money, basically? So we were like, okay, we need to get crafty about this and we need some way to like, one, make the decision makers in the bar actually try the liquid. Because generally speaking, when people try it, like the liquid stands up. We actually just won gold at the Irish Whiskey Awards.
Oh, congrats.
Thanks. Totally blind tasting. So the liquid really stands up, but it's actually like, if we went into the bar and just dropped in a mini, like that mini would just go into the abyss of all the minis that all the brands are sending in, like, you know. Where does it go? Like, how do we break through? So we started thinking about like, okay, what deliveries do bars get? Like, yes, alcohol deliveries, whatever. But like, we started playing around with the like old milkman delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started playing around with, you know, in America on the milk boxes, it's like missing.
Yeah.
So we were like, we are something new in the category. We're like new contemporary, all the rest of it. Why don't we make a milk carton like to scale? It's in our brand colors. So the milk carton is black and then all the writing on it is like neon pink. We have like a massive thing that just says milk question mark on the front of it. On the side, there's an arrow that says open here. On the back, there's the missing sign and it's a picture of Fox's Bow, like missing, picture of Fox's Bow. And then a little write-up that says a contemporary, creative, vibrant whiskey in a sea of look-alike black and green bottles that reflects modern Ireland, you know, follows through with the liquid being unreal, blah, 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 like this kind of blurb. And then on the side, a QR code, scan here on our social handles. You scan. It brings up a page that tells you all of the distributors we work with. So you can literally say, okay, I use Classic at the moment. Sure, I'll grab a bottle off Classic. Mm-hmm. And then inside the milk carton is our business card, some stickers, and of course, a mini.
Love it.
So that has been kind of getting...
That is out of the box. Yeah. That is good.
Yeah, so that's been getting a bit of cut through. And another one that we're working on at the moment is a Trojan Fox.
Oh.
Yeah, but I don't want to give too much about that away because Ash... My marketing manager is looking after that at the moment. Her official title is Head of Disruption. So she literally is like coming up with these ideas all the time. But yeah, we have a Trojan Fox in the works because there's a retailer that we've been trying to get in front of for ages that we just cannot get through to. Like they're so busy. So we're like, okay, like Trojan Fox.
That's
Operation
genius.
Trojan Fox.
So, that's yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
I love that. And you know what? It's a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Everything
exactly.
is so bloody serious now.
Yeah.
And like people are like digital obsessed.
Yeah.
Oh, digital. Everyone's going to open up a Trojan Fox.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to open up a milk carton and you're like, what is this thing?
And digital is great in the sense that like you can amplify all of those ideas. So,
yes.
You know, a stunt maybe before used to be like for the 50 people who happened to be in that place at that time and saw it, like flash mob, whatever. But then like, you should leverage social to then amplify that to like the masses who weren't there but see it and are like, oh, that's class. Like yes. It's real, it's a stunt, whatever.
There's a narrative there. There's a power. People are obsessed with kind of like reach and social and blah, blah, blah and just getting followers and stuff. But the true greats get followers by doing exceptional things. Mm-hmm. People are missing the exceptional things piece.
100%.
Whereas it's brilliant brands like yourself who are like, okay, we're going to put a lot of work into this. It's going to take time. It's going to take money. It's going to take effort. It's going to take creativity. And we're going to launch it.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, brilliant. I was listening to a great podcast yesterday. There was this young actor in the US and during lockdown, he started rapping and he's just blown up on, I'm going to send it to you because a lot of stuff you're talking about, he's blown up on TikTok. Him and his wife make these skits.
Okay.
And then the music is layered over and they're making a couple of million a month through downloads, through streaming, because they go viral on TikTok through doing these stunts and creativity. And then that results in streams to their music.
That's insane.
But all the creativity thing. So one of his pieces was they got a globe. They're like, I'm going to collaborate with an artist wherever this globe stops. Zambia.
That's class.
Collaborated with a Zambian rapper, put the two together. That
Unreal,
sort of stuff. Creativity stuff. So you're like that's stuck in my head now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's clever because they're skits and they do kind of like almost comedy sketches, but with the music layered underneath and then the music starts to play.
That's cool.
And the hook is the sketch and the sketch that just kind of like grabs people's attention going, wait, what?
Yeah.
It's not just like, oh, here's a music video.
Yeah.
They've reshaped the whole thing. They're like,
because
they realize they're TikTok first. They're like, okay, TikTok is where it is. YouTube Shorts where it is. We talked about this earlier.
Yeah.
Like short form video content.
Yeah.
That's where people are getting their 100%. Things now. And then you can drive them through the funnel to order or to place an order or to buy or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So like, I love that kind of like creativity. I think it needs to be more of that.
There
needs
100%.
To be more stuff. Yes, it's digital, but first it's done in the real world.
Yeah. I also think as well, we're in a very fun category, like alcohol.
If you make it fun though,
But like it should be fun because like think about when you consume alcohol, like generally speaking, it's like in a social setting, you're either like, you know, with your friends or you're at a party or whatever. Like it's fun in consumption. So why would it not be fun in like marketing? And like obviously there's legalities that you have to take into consideration, but it doesn't mean that like the way you show up needs to be this big, lofty, serious, you know, heavy thing. Like, It should reflect how it's consumed, which is fun, social, people.
How did this all start?
I would love to take credit for the idea.
You can. There's no one else here. You can just say yes, all my idea.
Oh, but Yeah, it's just between us. No, but it was actually my co-founder, Tony, he was living over in San Francisco. So he doesn't come from alcohol, which is actually a great thing. He has like such an unbiased perspective on things. Mm-hmm. But he was working for Google X, which is their moonshot factory.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he's a financial accountant by trade, which is great. So he's the yin to my yang. But he was kind of helping Google identify the next big things in tech. So like the driverless cars. And yeah, very cool.
What a cool job.
Yeah. But he was in this unbelievable bar stocked with like an insane collection of whiskey. And looking up at the shelves, he kind of felt two things. One was that all of the whiskeys looked the same. So it was very much kind of that sea of black and green. And then the other was that there was no whiskey that was really reflective of like his taste as a kind of younger consumer of whiskey, let's say. So he and I actually grew up across the road from each other. He would have been older than me. So we weren't like friends, but we'd have known of each other. So we'd see each other in the pub at Christmas and things like that.
Right.
And he knew that I was working for an alcohol company. So he messaged me one day, was like, can I pick your brain about something? Gave me a buzz, told me kind of this insight that he had and was like, look, what do you think? Like, you know, is there something to this? Or is there a reason that no one's doing kind of something a bit more contemporary? And when he rang me, the timing was weirdly serendipitous because I had been working on Irish whiskey brands, Scotch whiskey brands for like, I think it was 8 years at that stage, 7 or 8 years. And I loved Jameson. I loved the Glenlivet, Chivas, all the brands I was working on. But I was starting to get frustrated because we were spending so much money on consumer research every year just to kind of hear the same things back, which was that that younger demographic is looking for something different from whiskey than like their dads or their granddads. But because I was working on such kind of established brands, they naturally were quite risk averse because, you know, they couldn't go too left field and risk alienating their current demographic or...
You don't want to take the golden goose out behind the barn and kill it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For me, I was like, there's this glaring gap that no brand is kind of feeding into. So when he rang me with this idea, I was like the timing is so perfect.
But how do you go from there to here? This is the bit I always love to dig into. Yeah. That zero to one piece, because that's mad.
I know.
Like for you to get a phone call, not even though someone you know exceptionally well.
Yeah.
You know, you had a link. How do you go from there to here?
So we were actually, I'm sure we're one of the very few companies that would say like COVID was really good for us in the sense that. So after that conversation, it was very much like, look, let's pull at this thread. Like it could be nothing, but at the very least, it'll be an interesting exercise. So that was like at the end of 2019. So then around this time as well, I was moving back from Toronto to Ireland. I actually moved back to Ireland the day that Ireland went into lockdown the first time. And I guess the benefit for us was that we were able to take the time, I suppose, that we would have spent like commuting in and out of work to like look at this exercise. So like we were taking, you know, an hour in the morning, an hour in the evening, or like 2 or 3 hours in the evening, making calls, like leveraging our network, pulling at the thread.
So what were you doing? Were you trying to go, are we having a fever dream here, or is there actually something here?
There was kind of two sides to it. So I guess Tony was leading like, okay, is this actually a viable business? Like, could we fund this? How much would this cost? Like, okay, what do we need to make this happen? And then I was pulling at the thread of like, okay, like this is what I feel I'm pulling from the research, but like, is there actually an appetite for this? Is this going to be like really cool this year, but like a fad where it's out of fashion next year? So like finding those really like foundational insights, long-term consumer insights that we would build our whole brand off so that it was actually something of substance and not just like another gimmick. So that's kind of what we were doing. And like we worked with Board Bia along this time as well, because they have very early stage kind of resources that you can tap into if you're a food or drink business, which was fantastic as well. So that kind of trickled away. And the more time that we spent in it, the more, like not to speak for Tony, but I really felt like, okay, there's something really special here. Like I
When did you
like,
discover that? Because that's the light bulb goes on. You're like, yep, this is it.
Yeah, like I don't think it actually was like a moment. I think it was like You know when you're like really excited, like prematurely about something, and you're nearly getting cross with yourself, where you're like, no, like don't.
It happens to me every single week.
Yeah, you're like,
I'm like, I've got it. I've got the next big thing.
Yeah.
Every single week, and then I wake up the next day, I'm like, do you know, it's like the Simpsons, the crazy man is drawn all over the wall. And you're like, oh, I don't know what, maybe I might have had a bit much coffee yesterday.
Yeah.
That
you're
happens
like,
to me
what
all
was
the time.
I thinking? But it was exactly that. It was like, I nearly was like to myself, no, like don't allow yourself to get like overexcited about this now because like you don't know yet.
Yeah.
But I like there was just a feeling in my stomach where I was like, we are on something. Like we are on something here. Like this is special. Like no one has done this and there's no reason why. Like I was nearly waiting for the moment to be like, oh, that's why no one has done this before.
Yeah.
But equally, like now I'm like, oh, that's why no one has done this before because it's really hard.
Yeah.
Like it has been a slog. But
there was no foundational, you know,
no.
You weren't reversing the laws of gravity here.
No.
You know, up wasn't down. It was just going to be really bloody hard. And
yeah,
no one can tell you that anyway.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
You're not going to sit here like, pfft.
Yeah, 100%.
Hard work, love it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, it was that. So there wasn't really like one moment, but then we just kind of kept running with it and kept running. Probably the moment for me where I was like, this is it, was when I went full time on it.
That's the question I think I get asked the most, and that's the question I like to try and dig into for founders. When did you decide to do that, or how did you know? Because I get loads of messages of people going, oh, I really enjoyed the chat with Andy, but I just don't know when the time is right. How did you know?
Like, I probably didn't know. Like, it just got to the point where I was like, okay, I can't do both of these 100%. And like the balance is shifting in favor of Foxes Bow. Like I want to give Foxes Bow 100%. And it's unfair of me to do that at the expense of the company that I'm working for. So I was like, if we're going to make this work, I need 100% of my time to be on Foxes Bow. And I feel like we can make this work, but this duopoly isn't working anymore. Like two of these, something's got to give. So when I went full time on Foxes Bow, I wasn't taking a salary for a year. So I guess for me, I was like, okay, and like having the conversations with my husband and, you know, like things like that, being like, okay, this is going to be when all of our friends are putting, you know, deposits on houses, this is going to be a bet for us where we're like, we're choosing not to do that. We're choosing to like go out and do this, not like unpaid for a year, like basically share his salary and make it work. So it was that. It was like we had like, not that we had mad money in the bank, we definitely didn't, but we had enough that we knew we could cover ourselves for a year.
Yeah.
So it was that. It was like making sure we were at least bare minimum covered, but knowing that I really felt like we were on something with this and it required full-time attention. So I don't think, at least for me, there definitely wasn't a moment where I was like, now is the time.
Mm.
It was more like, okay, like now is the time in the sense that this needs 100% attention to like really get going.
And what about Tony? Was this something he was looking for, or was this kind of something that just kind of evolved for him as well?
I think it was just something that evolved for him. Like originally, so he obviously had the insight to be like, okay, like there's something missing in the category. And what's really interesting is he came at that from a consumer perspective.
Yeah.
Like I came at it very much from like, here's the data, here's the research, whatever. Whereas he was saying, there's nothing for me, which I always think like, that's so powerful.
Mm.
Because most brands, like when you think about whiskey in particular and the multinational brands, it's, you know, like people who are really far into their career that are the final decision maker. Whereas like the younger consumer, if that is your target consumer, like those people are not thinking about
there's
the same
disconnect.
Things. There's a disconnect.
Their product first.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just the way they are. But like for you, I think that's an incredible insight, is that it was founded from a need. Like it's the old cliche, scratch your own itch, but they're cliches because they're bloody true.
Yeah, 100%.
You know?
Yeah.
Like as you get older, you kind of go, yeah, it's true for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, you can fight it all you want, but it's true for a reason.
Yeah.
So did Tony start working on it then with you, and you both started just like chipping away and then?
Yeah. So he stayed, he was kind of doing both jobs. Like he stayed with Google and then was doing this in the evenings for about, I think it was like 6 months more than me, I think, around that. But it was really tough for him because he also moved home from San Francisco. So he was working for Google. Like he'd start his day, what are they, like 7 hours ahead?
I think so, yeah.
He'd start his day, whatever, like 7 hours ahead. He'd work all night with Google pretty much. He'd get his like sleep and then he'd be up at 6 or 7 to start on Fox's Bow for the few hours while San Francisco was asleep.
God, that's
tough. So it was tough. It was a slog for him.
That shows you wanted, though. I think that's how you know. I think we've kind of answered the question in a roundabout way. That's when you know.
Yeah.
When you can't not do it.
Yeah.
I think that's the moment is when you're like, I have to do this.
Yeah.
There's no like, oh, I must spend a bit of time at the weekend now.
Yeah.
There's none of that. Yeah. I think there's a lot of that. I think founders are like, oh, yeah, I'll just wait at the weekend.
Yeah.
If that's where you are, that's the wrong idea. Yeah, 100%. But if you're like, I have to do this today.
Oh, it's like all consuming. It's an obsession. Like,
it has to be.
Yeah.
I think it has to be.
Yeah.
To really, because as you said, it's bloody hard. Mm-hmm. When you have a great product, when you have a great idea, still bloody hard.
Yeah, 100%.
And you're never going to, there's those early stages where it's just graft.
Yeah.
There's no, as you get through it now, you're probably working a lot smarter. But
yeah,
it's graft.
Oh, it's graft.
It's hours. Yeah. Hours in, hours out. That's just how it goes.
Yeah.
And what was the first, was there a moment then beyond that where you're like, I think this might work?
Probably several along the way. So we were really lucky that we got accepted to the Foodworks program, which for anyone who is in food and drink, like, or has an idea around food and drink or anything, it's a good one to look into. It's basically for high potential food and drink startups in Ireland. It's co-funded by Chagas, Enterprise Ireland and Board Bia. And they kind of...
Foodworks. I'll put that in the notes as well.
Yeah, no, it's great. But it's very competitive to get onto. But when you're on it, it's just unbelievable in terms of shortcuts, like access to experts. They help you with your business plan, like all kind of the fundamentals. But we went on that. And as part of that, they funded research for us. So like, we had developed the whiskey ourselves, all the rest of it. The packaging, we worked with an unbelievable agency in Dublin, Together We Create, and actually a Limerick artist who did the artwork on the side, John Slade. But they funded research for us to see like what would be the product appeal based on, you know, the cask finish, what would be the product appeal based on the packaging, blah, 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 all these kind of pieces of research, which was great because when we went to the retailers, because we were bringing something so new to the category, we couldn't point to a successful like for like product and be like, sure, look, they've done really well and we're a similar product, so we're going to do really well, because a product like ours didn't exist. And we had no sales to show other than our e-commerce sales to begin with, which like in Ireland, kind of brick and mortar retailers don't really care about what you did through online because they're like, yeah, well, this is a completely different ball game. Yeah. So the fact that we were able to say, okay, look, we've no sales, but we have conducted research on our target demographic in Ireland, and this is what they had to say, like 97% product appeal, 91% likelihood to buy, blah, blah, blah.
I always think that, show me, don't tell me.
Yeah.
Show me.
So we were like, it's not us telling you anymore.
Yeah.
This is like the consumer who's going to buy the product in your shop saying, yeah, I want this on your shelf. So like, I think when we got that research back and we were like, until this point, it's all been hypothesis. It's been like founded in research, but still our interpretation of research to a certain degree. Whereas then when we actually got the findings back from the consumer that we're going after and, you know, 96% of them said this, it wasn't our thought about it anymore. It was, oh shit, like this is legit. Like this actually is resonating with consumers because we've done things differently, or like, you know, this
that's
is
an interesting
product.
Step because I think a lot of startups wouldn't take that step. They just keep bombing ahead.
Yeah.
But you took the pause to get the research to back it up. I think there's an important step. There's a good learning there for a lot of startups, especially in the physical space. Having that like tangible research is probably very, very important because especially when it's a brand new product, like you, that was an excellent insight. You can't just point and go, it's just like this.
Yeah.
That works. Like again, shortcuts, you know, humans go, okay, it's just like that.
Yeah.
I get it now. Yeah, cool. We go to the shop. Whereas when you're kind of able to go, here's the research to back it up.
Yeah, 100%. And actually just on that, because I was only talking to someone about this yesterday, something that we did and we didn't do purposely, but now I would like anyone who's at kind of concept stage of a product, I would like highly recommend they do this. So we were developing the whiskey itself at the same time as we were developing the packaging, because like we weren't in a position where we had enough budget to like fully focus on the packaging and then do the whiskey, or fully focus on the whiskey and then do the packaging. We were like, okay, we need to get this to market as quickly as possible so that we have cash coming in so that we can keep building this brand. So we did the consumer research through Board Bia purely based on aesthetics. So like the packaging was what people were giving feedback on.
Wow.
And then separately, we did research on the whiskey to see like what the feedback was from consumers based off kind of the three final iterations that we had. And I actually think, like, human nature, if someone hands you this bottle, immediately, even if they're only trying to get your feedback on the taste, you seeing that is going to give you some type of conscious or unconscious bias toward whether you're going to like the product or not. And vice versa, if you try the whiskey and you see the packaging, like maybe the taste of the whiskey is going to, whether you like the whiskey or not, is going to impact what you think of the packaging.
Of course.
Do you know what I mean?
We drink and eat in our eyes.
Yeah.
Where you're eating, how you're eating, who you're eating with,
yeah,
the temperature, the music, the ambiance,
100%.
That all plays a factor.
100%. So by separating them, you're getting pure feedback based on that particular component. So then when you perfect the whiskey and you perfect the packaging, then when it comes together, it's like a match made in heaven. And for us, that was really important. Like, it was a product of its environment, in the sense that we didn't have budget to take time to do both. But in hindsight, it made such a difference, because a really good whiskey will ensure a repurchase. But your initial purchase decision is going to be based on how it looks.
That's so key. That's so bloody interesting. They both had to stand on their own two feet first, and then you merge them together to make the perfect product.
Exactly.
That's so bloody interesting. Yeah.
And like, I'd love to say that's why I did that, but it wasn't. It was literally like budget, timing, all the rest of it. But in hindsight now, if I was ever to do it again, or if I was talking to anyone who was in concept stage, like 100%, I would suggest splitting them.
I love their speed to market as well.
Yeah.
Like, because again, we talked about, you know, restriction can breed creativity and genius. Yeah. Like, because you want, and I love that you had to get to market. It's not that you're like, oh, we'll just get it right and we'll get it right and get it right, because you see that all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, when it's right. It's never right.
It's never right.
It's going to die on the vine because you're never going to put it in consumers' hands.
It's that whole idea of like analysis paralysis, where like you nearly almost go full circle because you overthink it.
You
so
talk
much.
Yourself out of it.
Yeah.
If logic drove startups, we would never have anything.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, 100%.
Going into one of those competitive categories in the world.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense. Yeah. Why would you do that? But it's already well served.
Exactly.
Do we need another whiskey? Who knows?
Exactly.
You'd never do it.
Exactly. And like, we only launched properly like just over a year ago, and we've already changed the back of the pack. So when we started out, we were like, okay, like actually maybe we will lean kind of into the whole Limerick angle and put some Limerick slang on it and all this kind of stuff. And then our last iteration, we completely changed that again, because we were like, no, it's not about being from Limerick. It's kind of encapsulating that Limerick attitude of like the edginess, the like irreverence and all that kind of stuff. But it needs to be understandable and travel. Like, you know, if it goes into a consumer's hand in Texas, just sliding Texas in there.
Randomly?
Randomly.
I don't know why it's a Texas, but go on.
Of all places. But if it ends up in the hands of someone in Texas who's never been to Ireland, like they probably know Dublin. They probably have heard of Dublin.
Yeah.
They might know Cork. They probably won't know Limerick. No. Like, it would be a bit of a stretch. So like, we're handcuffing ourselves if we do that.
Yeah.
But like,
and the Paddy Wackery thing as well.
Yeah.
Like, that, like, it's modern, cool brands like yourself. Don't do that.
Yeah, we don't need provenance.
You don't.
It's kind of an old school way of thinking. But my point is, like, we were able to change the label within a year of us launching. Like, you can iterate. Like, you don't have handcuffs.
That's
once you've
the thing.
Once you've launched the product. You can change the bottle shape if you want to. Like, get it to market, test it with real consumers, see what's landing, see what isn't, change in real time. Like, it's the only way that small brands can survive. And to be honest, it's the way forward. Like, I think that in a category that's dominated by multinationals, whether it is spirits or otherwise, your superpower as a small brand is agility. Because like, every multinational in every kind of space, or any corporate, let's say, has so many layers of hierarchy that when an opportunity comes in, you know, like, it's there in front of you. Okay, it needs to get these levels of approval. By the time it's approved, you've missed the opportunity.
Yeah.
Whereas our superpower is agility. We can be like, feck it, like we hadn't planned to do that, but yeah, we can do it. Let's act on it. That's a massive opportunity. Go, 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 go.
You're thinking in days, not years.
Exactly.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
You're planning for longevity, but you're acting in days and hours.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's the mismatch that a lot of startups get. I see it especially with startups. If I chat to them after 2-3 years, they start acting like a big company. And I've had this, a friend of mine has had this recently with hit the startup he's working in. They got quite successful, hired a ton of people, fancy office, and they're like, oh shit, the wheels fell off.
Yeah.
And they had to strip it back to their core. And now they're back to their core and they're flying.
That's unreal.
But like, that's what happens. Yeah. So you do see that with startups quite a bit. Oh, we need to, you know, need to have, you know, multinational practices and we need to do this. We need to have this. And you're like, do you though?
Yeah.
Because you're fundamentally changing who and what you are then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas 100%. Like you said, that is the future. Yeah. That is the modern entrepreneurs. With Charlie Butler from Balance, and he was saying that like that's their modern style.
Yeah.
Being flexible, being agile, being quick, and being personable and being honest and being open. Like you're not saying you figured it all out.
No, not.
You're willing to go,
stretch the imagination.
Yeah, the back didn't work.
Yeah.
But there's beauty in that.
Yeah.
Instead of sticking to it, going, no, it'll work.
Yeah.
No, it'll work. No, it'll work. Well, it's not working. So let's just change it. Move on.
And that's amazing to be able to do that. Like to not be rigid in your ways and like, you know, like who knows what's going to happen in the next 3 years, let alone like in the next 6 months or whatever. So like just being open to opportunities and being like, okay, like we know who we are. We know our positioning. We know what we're about. But how we show up is open to those opportunities and being agile and changing things and chopping things as they work or they don't work or testing things. And
you've principles, you've core principles.
Yeah.
They don't change. But everything else, what is it? Strong intentions loosely held.
Yeah.
You know, that you have your core principles, they ain't going to change.
Yeah.
But everything else is flexible and malleable. When I see companies now, after everything was happening the last 3 years, you're kind of going, have you not seen that? Everything can change.
Yeah.
Everything, the fundamental core of your whole business. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're office based. Now you're remote and hybrid.
Yeah.
But now it's really interesting to watch companies go backwards now. They're trying to replicate what they had before COVID. And you're like,
I saw Zoom is trying to get everyone back to that. Like
crazy.
The most counterintuitive move ever.
I saw that and I'm like, oh, wow. Like, I just find it weird that the companies are reverting back to safety of like, this is how we've always done it.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's a surefire way to run it into the wall.
It's absolutely ludicrous. Like, yeah, it's mad.
I just don't understand that. Like, I think it's, I know I we talked about it outside. I think we're at a tipping point in the world in terms of startups and business and companies. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a whole new way that the companies are built, like you guys are built, in terms of flexible, malleable, you know, open, consumer focused. And realize you can do it with speed. You have to do it with speed.
100%.
Because we could wake up in the morning, the world could be changed again.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you got to go back online again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so like for you guys, so what's the path? Like, I know it's going to be flexible, it's going to change, but what are you looking for in the next kind of like 6 to 18 to 24 months?
So the big one for us now is the US. So that, like speaking of being flexible, that actually came 12 months sooner than we anticipated. So from everyone I had kind of talked to, either that I used to work with or like just kind of in my network that works within alcohol and is very familiar with the US. Like even we're really lucky, but my old CEO from Pernod Ricard, he is our non-executive director. And then the ex senior vice president of new brand ventures for Pernod Ricard in the US, he's one of our strategic advisors.
Nice.
He just took a role as the president for Sincoro, which is Michael Jordan's tequila.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So he knows his stuff, like, and he knows everyone in the US in the alcohol industry.
Power of the network again, though.
It's unbelievable. But from everything that we kind of were able to garner in terms of like those conversations, we were like, okay, it's going to take minimum 12 months, probably 18 months to get into the US. It's just such a hard market to navigate.
Why is it so hard?
So there's basically a three-tier system. So you have to have an importer, you have to have a distributor, and then the distributor sells to the retailer. So like that's kind of
the line. That does sound complex.
Yeah. So it's like not relatively easy. Maybe that's downplaying it, but it's easier to get an importer than it is to get a distributor. Like it's really competitive to get a distributor at the moment because there's so many brands and there's so few distributors. So we knew it was going to take a huge amount of time. Again, the power of networking. A friend of mine put me in touch with a guy who owned a vodka in Texas to pick his brain about Texas as a market because it was one of the ones that we'd identified as kind of like, okay, like this could be a really good first place for us in the US. We were chatting to him anyway, just to pick his brain. he and I just gelled. We were just singing off the same hymn sheet, and he very much took us under his wing and kind of like is paying it forward, I suppose. Like, he's 10 years into the business. He's so successful, unbelievable brand built, all the rest of it. So he kind of was like, okay, I really like these guys. I like what they're doing. I like what they're about. Like, shortcutted so many paths for us, you know, so many introductions, got us in front of the right distributors and things like that. Like, that would have been the hardest thing for us to do, was actually getting in front of them, getting time right, with okay. them. And then once we were in front of them, like, we gave it socks, like, we gave them the pitch, we told them the white space we were going after, the consumer, the success to date in Ireland, all that stuff. And then we were able to win them over with that. But like, getting there would have been so hard without that yeah. helping hand.
Okay.
Now, all that to say, because we hadn't anticipated it happening so quickly, we very much had to like rejig our whole kind of next 12 to 18 months and been like, okay, this opportunity does not come by every day. We need to grab it with both hands. So that's kind of where we're at the moment. So the US is definitely our core focus for kind of the next 12 to 18 months. It's such a massive opportunity. Like, we were talking about it earlier, but like, the only way to treat the US is as 50 countries, because essentially that's what it is. So yeah. we're treating Texas as like our first country, let's say, within the US that we're really focused on. And ideally, we would create a bit of a blueprint by being able to, again, see what's landing, see what isn't landing, see what we need to tweak, develop some kind of blueprint that then we could scale into other US states. Mm. Obviously, like, with the nuances in each state, but the foundational kind of blueprint
would
be there.
Your base will be there.
Yeah.
What's your verdict on Proper 12?
I think they are a great example of a brand that has focused on the consumer and the lifestyle positioning as opposed to the product. So,
what does
like,
that mean?
Fundamentally, right? Look at the numbers. Proper 12 is already the third largest Irish whiskey in the US by volume. So, it's surpassed Bushmills, which is its parent company.
That's wild.
And Bushmills has been there for like, what, probably like 80 years? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, like, what can we learn from that?
Mm.
They have positioned themselves as a lifestyle and consumer first brand. So, like, consumers in the US are buying Proper 12, not because of the whiskey that's in the bottle. They're buying it because of what it stands for. Do you know what I mean? Like, Conor McGregor is the whiskey. The whiskey is Conor McGregor. The consumers are buying into that. Like, they want to bring a bottle to their friends because it says something about them to their friends. So, like, I think you can borrow from that school of thought. And to be honest, like, that is kind of what we're trying to do with Fox's Bow, in a sense that it's not purely about the whiskey. We're not going to bombard you with the jargon. It's about, like, what do you want to say to the world with your consumer choices? Because, like, ultimately, people vote with their wallets. Like, yeah. that's the saying. And it's true. Like, people get behind products that they feel reflect something about them to their friends or to the world. So yeah, that's a very diplomatic answer for me, but yeah, I think we can take learnings from it. I wouldn't personally be a huge fan of any Irish brands that go down the kind of like diddly eye traditional fighting Irish kind of stereotype, but I suppose that's just my own taste. I prefer something that is a bit more reflective of how I see Ireland, which is very vibrant and creative and contemporary. So yeah, a brand a bit more like Fox's Bow, some might say, you know.
Well, handled. Going to do a quick fire round.
Okay.
What book would you recommend every entrepreneur must read?
Grit by Angela Duckworth.
Mm.
It is unbelievable. It's all about how success is a mixture of passion and perseverance toward a long-term goal. So it's not enough to just be really talented. Like, how many unbelievably talented people do you know that started businesses and it just didn't work out?
Yeah.
It's like a mixture of the resilience, focusing on that long-term goal, like a passion, a fire in your belly, that whole like idea of fall down 7 times, get up 8. I just think it's required reading for any entrepreneur.
Brilliant. I think that hasn't been recommended before as well.
Oh gosh.
What's something you didn't pay attention to early on but had to learn the hard way?
Probably taking time off, because like, as an entrepreneur, like, your brand, your business is all consuming. Like, it eats into your night, your morning, your weekends, everything. And I think for me, I let it, and I was always thinking about it. I was always working on it, and I started to burn out, and like, that's not beneficial to anyone. So now I I prioritize my work hours. I'm like really efficient in the way that I work. I work hard, but I always make sure that I make time to like decompress and relax as well, so that when I am working, I'm 100%.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, I think that's really important. It's something I'm trying to focus on as well. It's just when you're on, you're on. Be on. Yeah. When you're off, you're off. Because there is that element of trying to be on 60% all the time.
Yeah.
And it just does recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. What have you sacrificed to achieve your success so far?
Comfort? No. Probably like financial sacrifices, like when all of my friends, as I said earlier, were kind of putting down payments on houses and all that kind of stuff, all of our money went into Fox's Bow. Like we funded it between the founders to begin with. So that, like any time off, any downtime, like still I struggle with kind of not always thinking about it, not always being on. Sleep, when it's like stressful, you lose sleep over it. But I have to say, I don't feel like those things are a sacrifice, because I feel like I'm building something that is like worthy.
Yeah.
I think if I'm honest with myself, there's a certain level of guilt there for me, for like my family and friends, because I chose to be an entrepreneur and I knew what I was sacrificing, if I want to use that word. Whereas like they didn't choose this journey and they are part of it. So like my husband, like, you know, picking up the pieces when something goes catastrophically wrong and I just am all consumed by it, or like same with my family. Like I feel, and even, you know, I was saying it to you earlier, but anytime we're opening up a new market, we move there. And like, he's coming on that journey with me. He supports me 100%. Mm. So I definitely harbor a guilt that I wouldn't harbor if I wasn't an entrepreneur. But I think that's just part and parcel. Hopefully it'll come around where...
Exactly. You're building something. I think building something from zero to one is one of the most magical things in the world. I think it's very special. If I give you 10 million euros today, what are you going to do with it?
I would invest it all in Fox's Bow.
That's such a standard answer.
No, I would invest it all in Fox's Bow in the US.
Okay.
Because I believe in, like, you have to spend money to make money, but I believe in the power of brand 100%. But like, brand is expensive.
Yes, it
is. Because you're trying to like convince someone of what it stands for, first and foremost. Like, obviously become familiar with it, have the awareness, but like what it stands for, so that someone is buying into that brand, and that's expensive. Do you know? So that I would 100% put it in that over the next kind of 2-3
years.
Okay,
I'll let you off with that one. That's a decent enough answer. What's something in your daily routine you wish had started sooner?
Probably making time for exercise. So again, I kind of thought that exercise, like, not that I particularly enjoy exercising, but like I kind of treated it as like a self-indulgence where I was like, it was for me. So I would prioritize work, or I would prioritize other things. Whereas now I'm like, no, I am so much better. Like if I'm stressed and I do like even half an hour exercise, I'm like a new woman after it, because in it, it's mindfulness. Like the only thing I can focus on when I'm exercising is the exercise. So like, that's the only time in the day when I'm not thinking about 500 things. I'm only thinking about that one thing. So afterward, I'm like a new woman. I'm so refreshed and energized.
The power is unbelievable. Yeah. Endorphins, the power, the clarity. It's 100%. Just phenomenal.
Yeah.
If you start a new company in the morning, what would you do?
I'd actually love to get into men's skin care.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, again, based off an insight that my husband had, where he, like, it just, I think it's that. It's like, I love, like, when it's coming from a consumer want or consumer need, as opposed to like sitting in a boardroom being like, what doesn't exist yet?
Yeah, so I
feel like no one has like nailed premium men's skincare yet en masse.
Yeah.
So I'd love to
agree
do that.
With that. Yeah, it's actually quite hard to find stuff.
Yeah.
If I give you 1 million euro, you can only invest in one company or person. Who is it or what is it?
Okay, so CPG is what I know. So I'm going to stick with CPG. And it's actually an Irish company. I would invest in Riley. I feel like they are just so on the money in the sense of like that consumer want. Like, they've made the consumer journey so easy. Like, it's a product you need once a month, and they've basically said, we're going to deliver it to your door. And from a like corporate perspective, while every corporate all of a sudden is really kind of careful about making sure that they're supporting their female employees and, you know, any employees that get periods, like, they are coming with the solution for that. Again, there's like an agility and a nimbleness to it that the multinationals just don't have. So I feel like they are absolutely like one to watch. I would put my money behind them.
I love Riley. big fan of Fiona. She's cool.
Yeah, she's great, very cool person. Cool.
They're like yourself. They've just come on the public radar very quickly.
Yeah.
And they're just, every time you have a touch point with them or the brand, it's very slick, yeah, very professional. Big fan of them. So definitely, I'll agree with you. I'll go 50-50 with you on that one. What do you believe that other people might find strange or strongly disagree with?
I probably believe that being a female entrepreneur has made me better. And that isn't to say that being a female entrepreneur is easy, because I think like all the stats we could pull out show that we're definitely like fighting an uphill battle. But I think because I know that going into any conversation, it's like driven me to be like, oh, I'm going to nail this. Like I want to leave this room and for them all to be like, wow, like either like she knows her stuff or like she absolutely killed that or whatever. Like it nearly puts the fire in my belly to be like, I want to prove that like we can do this. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like I actually almost see that as an advantage. There's actually a brilliant book, Malcolm Gladwell. I know this is like thrown in a second book now, so sorry.
Oh, look, we're book nerds here.
Changing the format. It's called David and Goliath.
Yes, it's very good. I've read it.
Oh
actually.
My God,
it's
unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's exactly that. It's all about how perceived advantages can sometimes be disadvantages and perceived disadvantages can sometimes be advantages. And one of the examples that struck with me was apparently there's a disproportionate amount of entrepreneurs who are dyslexic.
Mm.
Because when they were in school, the linear way of teaching and thinking, like they couldn't navigate that. So they always had to be thinking about shortcuts to kind of get to the same place, but like do it in a different way, which is exactly the skill set that you have to apply to entrepreneurism. So like, yeah, I find that so interesting. And I actually think that same kind of concept or philosophy applies to being a female entrepreneur, because you feel you have something to prove and like, you know, you double down on it. So yeah, that's probably
I
one
love that. There's a growth mindset piece to that as well. You've clearly married the two. What's one thing you spend money on in your personal life that brings you immense joy?
Probably travel, both from like a personal perspective. Like I'd be a very curious person, which obviously bodes well for kind of creating brands and things like that. But like, I love going to new places. I love like really immersing myself in like the culture there. And I love languages and all that kind of stuff.
Where's your favorite place?
Oh God. The one that just popped into my head there was Guatemala. Like we went to Guatemala. It was actually just as like COVID was kind of starting. And it was just a little oasis. It was so culturally different to anything I've ever experienced. It just was like incredible. Like the landscape, the people were so lovely, so welcoming. That's the one that pops into my head. But like,
Deadly.
Yeah, so many.
What's your final piece of advice for every entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur listening?
I would say that startups have no space for ego. So it just doesn't work if you're coming in and you feel uncomfortable not knowing things. Because the reality is, like, the more I learn, the more I realize I know nothing. So you have to be able to put the ego aside and reach out to strangers or reach out to people you kind of know or old contacts or friends of friends or some people in your network and ask them the questions or ask them the intros. Because the worst thing that can happen is they say no or they don't reply. Worst case.
Yeah.
The best thing that could happen is they could give you that tiny tidbit of information that you didn't even know you needed that joins all of the dots. Mm. Or they can give you the intro to the exact right person at the exact right time. But you're going to get none of that unless you're willing to like put yourself out there, ask the stupid questions, you know, take the risks, be kind of uncomfortable, you know, with those kind of outreaches and trying to make the most out of, I suppose, the network that's there. But it's that. It's like, yeah, like forget about ego.
If you don't ask, the answer is always no.
Exactly. And people are generally sound.
That's
like,
it.
Like 90, in my experience.
Probably 9%.
Yeah.
Either you don't get a reply or they're like, yeah, speak to Alice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like I had a call last week. I cold messaged someone on LinkedIn. I was like, look, can I please pick your brain about this? It's a field I'm completely not familiar with, but I need to familiarize myself with it really quickly. She was like, yeah, no problem. I was on the phone to her for 2 hours the following Tuesday.
class.
Like, just sound. People are just sound. People really have this mentality of like, pay it forward. And like, everyone roots for kind of the underdog. Mm. And when you're in a startup and you're small and you're trying to make something work, I think people respect that. And they're like, yeah, of course, it's no skin off my back to help you. Of course I will. But if you never asked for that, like if I was in my head and was thinking like, God, I don't know her now, that she's going to think it's so weird or she's not going to reply or whatever. Yeah. I never would have gotten all of that kind of unbelievable guidance from her in those 2 hours. But it's just like being comfortable being like...
I always think of that. Every time I'm kind of on the edge of like doing that, I'm like, in my head, I replay the thing of like, do you want to look like you're right or do you want to get it right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true.
I'm like, I would look like... And I get to ask all these silly questions on the pod. So I'm like, no, for anyone who's not familiar with this, but like, I want to know.
Yeah.
I'd rather look foolish and go, I don't know that.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah.
100%. Than to sit there and go, and I used to do that when I wasn't kind of as assured as I am now. And I used to go, oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
Just leave there feeling ridiculous because mm-hmm. you haven't learned anything.
Yeah.
You haven't exchanged any value.
Yeah.
But like people are generally sound and will people pay it forward. If you ask the right way, people will pay it forward.
Yeah, 100%.
Where can people learn more about Fox's Bow and you?
You can follow us on Instagram at Fox's Bow Whiskey, or you can visit our website, foxesbowwhiskey.com.
Where can they get some Fox's Bow, most importantly of all?
Lots of places. So we're in Tesco, Super Value, Centra, Select O'Brien's, Select Number 21's. We're in all of the great bars. We're going to be in even more of the great bars now that we bring all the milk cartons
around.
And if
around. They're not, you ask for it. Yes. You say you need to get Fox's Bow in here.
Please do, yes.
So wherever you're listening, go in and ask for Fox's Bow.
Yes.
And if they don't have it, tell them what it is.
Exactly, yeah.
Alice, that was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks a million for having me. That was great.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Alice. Wherever you're listening, whether it's on Apple, Spotify or YouTube, click subscribe. It really helps the pod grow. I'll see you back here in a couple of days. If you want to learn more, go to mrgaryfox.com.